is Dr. Tom Pritchard. You're listening to the Numero Uno podcast in all of professional wrestling, the Spanish announce table.
The Spanish announce table.
Tom.
Tim.
Another week has gone by. It is a...
Has it, Tim? Yeah, and guess what? This one was a big one.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I get that a lot.
Ladies and gentlemen of the podcasting listening crowd, we were going to be talking about, for the majority, honestly, non-main roster WWE news. So before we do all that, though, Tim, this was a holiday weekend, Memorial Day, and whatnot. Did you celebrate being a former service member of the U.S. military? And if you did not, or if you did, what did you do? What were you up to?
I mean, didn't do any sort of Memorial Day celebrations.
Did you get any free things? Aren't you supposed to get free things?
No, that's a Veterans Day thing. So Memorial Day is to honor the ones that have fallen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so the Veterans Day is more anybody that had served before, right? There's also I think Service Members Day is the other day, where it's active duty, which is the lesser known of the three, you know? I didn't do much that particular day. It was one of the days we had to not actually do much for the day. You know what I mean? The rest of the weekend we stayed busy, did a lot of mowing once the sun broke for about 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Those weeds are getting pretty high out there at the old Rainer Ranch. But most of my time was spent doing the comedy club. And I got to tell you, Tom, I think I found a new, at least top five favorite comedian. And his name is J.C. Carias. I don't know if you've seen this guy on TV or anything.
I have not.
He was at the comedy club. Super funny. And got to talk to him. Super nicest guy. Look him up. It's J.C., like the initials, and then C-U-R-R-A-I-S, J.C. Carias. And then last night, Tom, I sat there and watched the news hoping I wouldn't watch my family die in a tornado as it happened.
Yeah, see, that was what you should have led with. You kind of buried the lead there. You almost died from a tornado.
I did not. I was not within.
Okay, you were almost a widow because of a tornado.
So to set the stage here, we had the physically largest tornado in the Kansas City metro area in six decades, I think they said, since the 50s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A mile wide at its largest spot. And, I mean, I knew there was rain and clouds, but there has been that for seemingly months now here where we live. And so I thought nothing of it, taking my son to soccer practice about 15 miles away from the home. And as soon as we get out, sirens start going off, and I'm like, oh, crap. Right? I'm like, well, we're here at the soccer place. It's indoors. They'll have a shelter. So we go in, and I start looking on my phone, and I realize, oh, I'm not necessarily in path of the storm. They're just kind of doing it countywide, right? And we're in the same county. And so I look on it, and I'm like, oh, crap, this is headed right for my house, and this is fucking huge, right? And I'm like, all right? So I also get a text saying, hey, soccer practice canceled. Sirens going off. We're all leaving. And I'm like, oh, crap, right? So now I'm at the place, and I'm like, well, I can't go home. That's right where it's headed, right? Like, I can't leave. But I've got to call them, and I call my wife. The sirens are going off. Dogs are barking. She's like, don't talk to me, right? So I'm like, okay, she's on it, right? Like, she's already handling that. And then, we talk again. She gets settled. Everything's going crazy. All right, so they start showing on the news, like, there's a major shopping district called the Legends down from my house, about 10 minutes, and it's there. And they're showing it from, like, over the Kansas Speedway. And it looks wider than the Kansas Speedway. And they were like, this is headed right for these cameras. They're like, we're honestly afraid of what we're about to see from these cameras. Like, this might wipe out all of the Legends. And it was headed in its current direction right up, like, it was going to hit my housing, like, area. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I'm going to sit here and watch on the news. And they were already saying, it came from Lawrence, homes already being completely ripped off of the foundation and cars being thrown miles away. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, my wife, daughter, five dogs, and two cats are in serious danger here, right? And all I can do is sit in this soccer thing and watch it, right, on my phone. I couldn't tell you I was in a silent panic. I didn't even told you that because you were checking in on me to make sure I was okay. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what to fucking do here. Like, and the answer is nothing. You can't do shit, right? So for whatever reason, right. What happens there is at that spot, it breaks up into five smaller tornadoes, which is very common in large tornadoes, I guess, right? Like, they just can't support themselves at some point. But they'll break off, but they still have the propensity to do what this one was doing and still act as one, right? They're moving. Now it's five tornadoes. It's Sharknado all of a sudden, right? But those five manage to kind of split the lanes, as it were, of that major shopping district. It managed to change its directions and kind of go up the interstate corridor, cross over the river. And do not get me wrong, this thing continued and caused major damage before that. So I don't want to downplay this and be like, man, we dodged a bullet because my family dodged a very serious bullet. But all you've got to do is Google Linwood, Kansas, and some of the other, you know what I mean, areas of Missouri and Kansas that got hit by those tornadoes last night. And it is not a pretty picture. I mean, the entire town of Linwood, Kansas looks like it is in a trash pile. You've seen this stuff, I'm sure, Tom. Manage to delay that. You know what I mean? Like, after the all clear was set, they called their thing. I rushed home. I haven't talked to anybody personally that I know that has been affected, but I, for what it was, largest tornado of F5 proportions, largest tornado in whatever decades, they had no fatalities as of like hours later. Like, there was lots of structural damage, injuries abounded, but nobody had been killed from this as of that point. And I don't know if I'd heard today if any had or anything, but surprisingly low fatalities for the severity and the damage this thing caused. But yeah, so that was my scare yesterday. Scary. Yeah, I was like, oh shit, I might just be me and the boy from here on. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, next. Yeah, that sounds like a Western, right? Like, your family was taken out by a tornado, and now it's you.
You ever seen
The
Road? You ever seen that movie? Like, yeah, I
know. Right. You have to jump on horseback and make a new life in a new town.
Right. This is me and the boy, man. We managed to salvage a few cans of beans from the rubble, and we're hiking it to Mexico, man. We're going to, right? Just going to try life out there. Yeah, but thankfully everyone was okay. I mean, everybody that I know personally, I know some people have been very affected, obviously. There's federal aid coming in, so it was pretty serious, though. And you also avoided damage, it sounds like. I know you know what I mean? I don't think you guys were so much in the direct path. Maybe you were at one point, no?
No, we didn't even get rain. We got nothing. Everything in the direct Kansas City metro area, we were fine.
It really
was
did
all
hit
north
the
of
outskirts
us, so.
Of the northeast corner or west corner of town. Yeah, so, I mean, that was basically my week in a nutshell, was laughing till I thought I would die, and then afraid my family would die from a tornado, right?
Right.
What about you?
Well, that, thankfully, is all good now. I went to my first baseball game of the season. Kansas City Royals played the New York Yankees. New York Yankees won by one run, 5-4. You know, here's the thing about baseball.
Yeah.
When baseball matters, playoffs, World Series, wild card game to get into the playoffs, a la 2014 Royals Athletics is what I'm thinking of. There is almost nothing better because the downtime builds the drama, right? So it's the 3-2 pitch after that pitch, right? And then the pitcher gets the ball back and then – you know, the buildup of what pitch will he go with? Oh my God. You know, that downtime has so much of drama built into it, and it's amazing. And so when baseball matters, there's not much that can beat it, right? But when it doesn't, Christ's sake, it is fucking boring. We took the kids, because this is how boring baseball can be when it doesn't matter. There's a carousel at Kauffman Stadium that kids get on because they can't fucking hold their attention because baseball is so fucking boring. And I was like, hey, let's go back to the carousel. Well, doesn't this sound like fun? So we got the fireworks after. That was fun. Everything was good. But it just dawned on me, like, I love baseball, but man, they got to do something. I think they need to – and. I don't know. That's maybe a little bit too far. I was going to say maybe they need to start contracting teams because some of these teams will never fucking matter. I'm sorry, Miami Marlins. Like, you won't fucking ever matter. Milwaukee Brewers, you're not going to fucking matter really. So we need to start, consolidating these teams so that all the or keep all the teams but fucking cut the games down, because that is just – something there is just not computing – with.
Okay, so I've not been a long-term baseball fan such as yourself. So when I say these things, long-term baseball fans may be like, fuck you, man, right? But
yeah, probably.
I did watch the two series of the Royals, you know, the 2 years of the Royals where they got hot, and it kind of reminded me of those things that you're talking about in baseball, right? Large portion of it is super fucking boring. It is hard to follow the entire season. When it matters, and it is tight, close game, especially late. Like, let's say it's bottom of the ninth, tie game, and you got a guy on third, right? Two outs, guy at the plate, and you're saying 3-2, right? I mean, not much more intense, right? World Series on the line, right? Like, couldn't get any more like this is the fucking next pitch and determines everything. Those moments make you want to piss your pants with fucking anticipation and just nerve-wracking because of that. It's that downtime, right? So they managed to pan the camera to every goddamn buddy. And every single one of them is, like, chewing their fucking fingernails, looking at somebody else for, like, this is going to fucking happen, right? Like, the manager's sweating. Like, they're trying to get signals in. Like, it's just this whole, like, hair-pulling out thing. You're like, oh, my God, somebody just fucking make the pitch already. Like, right? Like, it absolutely is one of the most enthralling things in those moments. So you're right. They need to make more of those moments, right?
Yep.
They need to shorten the season. I don't give a good rat's ass. Whatever argument you're telling me, there's no reason to have 160 games, plus all the spring, plus all the thing. And here's something. You might not need so many goddamn pitchers in your rotation then. And you might not need to have guys having Tommy Johns all the time because of then either, if they're not having to do it so goddamn much.
Also, I am a professional baker now, if you didn't know. Made some lemon curd, lemon cakes, made some strawberry shortcakes, made some cheesecakes really? That were gluten-free for a pregnant lady who has diabetes. It's like gestational diabetes or whatever. So we had to make them healthy. I'm pretty amazing at it. Just letting you know. So if you need cupcakes, hit me up. I'm about to start my own business. I don't know what I'm going to call it. Maybe Headlock Cupcakes or something. I don't know, but I'm fucking Headlock. Amazing. That's the other thing. Then on Monday, the holiday, I went to Monday Night Raw, and it was not enjoyable. Just going to tell you that.
It was like a baseball game.
Oh, way worse. Way worse. Way worse.
I didn't go for that reason, Tom. I knew it was going to be boring, and I knew it would drive me insane.
Baseball, or fucking baseball, Raw needs to be a live event that happens to be televised and not a television show that happens to have 10,000 people. There was so many fucking times where it's a four-way to determine the number one contender for the title, and it's just four guys and a ref standing in the dark while I see a fucking Chef Boyardee ad or whatever the fuck it was. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Or I saw Triple H. I saw Shane McMahon standing in the dark three segments. Really?
Yeah.
That's fucking stupid. That's Raw. Anyhow, went to it. It was fine. It was cool to see Brock Lesnar. One of my check marks was fulfilled where I got to see Ricochet finally in person. It was a guy that I've been wanting to see since, you know, he's back in the Indies and Bola and all that stuff. Been a big fan of his. Wanted to see him live. Finally got to see him live. So that's the reason I went. I wanted to finally say, hey, I saw Ricochet in person. Him and Cesaro put on a really entertaining live match. That was probably the highlight of the evening besides Brock Lesnar's breakdancing. But also this weekend, and let's get into our first topic. Also this weekend, and why I said it was such a big week in non-WWE news, is because on Saturday night, which I thought was pretty cool, not a Sunday night, a Saturday night, in Las Vegas, Nevada, was the first ever pay-per-view for All Elite Wrestling called Double or Nothing. Now, this has been getting widely accepted as a successful first pay-per-view. Tim, first off, did you see it? And second off, if you did, what were your general thoughts?
I did see it. My general thoughts were not bad, guys. Like, this actually came out good. Like, I'd give this a solid good, right? I'd even give it an A. Like, you guys got a solid A. Like, you guys passed this. Like, there really wasn't many complaints I had. For not knowing the overwhelming majority of these people, that didn't bother me as much, right? I knew watching a lot of these matches, like, man, I wish that I knew some storyline that gave me a reason to care.
Mm-hmm.
Although that seems to be a bit of a problem that we had with the WWE product too. So I wasn't trying to complain too much about that. I'm like, well, shit, I turn on Raw and have that problem. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I thought there seemingly wasn't big mistakes, right? The thing that stuck out to me a lot, and you mentioned this a lot online, I think, is the commentary was terrible.
Mm.
All the way around. All of it, bad.
So all of Excalibur, it. Excalibur, I thought, was fine.
I didn't think so. I thought he's bad, too.
I thought he was okay. I graded...
I think he's okay as a third guy.
Right. And I graded a little bit on a curve, because some of the general thoughts that I had was the camera work was shaky. The bad boy, Joey Janela, you missed him getting the cigarette in the forehead because they were shooting a different shot. And those things I said, like, hey, we're going to get better with time, right? So I let Excalibur and I let Jim Ross and I let some of those camera things go, because there was a couple different times too where Jim Ross was like, I'm not sure where we're at. And it makes sense. This is a new crew. This is the first time you're all working together. So Jim Ross might have his shit together, but producer X might not. And so for the very first show, I forgave a lot of that. Now, what I will not forgive, though, is 3 hours of just vanilla corny shit. And that other guy, Alex fill in the blank, whatever his name was so corny. Terrible. He was so corny and bland. He made Byron Saxton look like Tupac. That fucking guy needs to not be on commentary. If he offers AEW something, let it be anything but commentary, because he was dreadful. He put me out of the element so many different times. There were so many times where, for example, like, we'll get into it in a little bit, but when Jon Moxley debuts and you hear Jim Ross giving an amazing call, right? With a twinkle in his eye, he has, you know, reignited the fire or whatever he said. And then this Alex Yahoo goes, I don't think he's here to say thank you. And he said it just like that. What in the fuck?
Yeah, he was bad. Now, that call was great, and that's Ross says, and who knows, he says he didn't know he was showing up. Now, I'm sure he thought he might, so he probably had something prepared, right? You know what I mean? If he's any kind of smart.
He didn't know when he was going to show up, like right during the Cody match or maybe during the Omega, like that.
And that's what I mean. He probably had an idea of something he'd say, right? Like if and when anybody showed up, you know what I mean? Because he probably suspected that. But So to set the tone too, for maybe we have new listeners and maybe some people have forgot, we're not just complaining angry dudes on the internet like, well, the commentary sucked too. This is our wheelhouse. We both have communications degrees in journalism. You've actively done commentary for fighting promotions. Mm-hmm. We've been here. We've done that. And we've been lifelong fans of this product to know also now how to go back and listen to that, with that ear. And all of this was bad. Even Ross, notwithstanding, has his great moments. There was moments where he completely lost all sense of kayfabe when they were talking about the 10-second rule as opposed to the 5-second rule. He's like, well, that makes a lot more sense in this day and age. These performers, with so much that they're doing in these matches, like, it doesn't make any sense for them to try to be getting in and out of 5 seconds. I'm like, no, man, you just really completely pulled the whole curtain back there. Now, I think it was enough terminology that maybe people who wouldn't know, younger kids, may not have picked up on that. You know what I mean? But it made it really hard. I was like, dude, Jim, you're the guy who's always complaining about not it being acting real enough. And here you are just dropping that. And then the rest of it was just, I don't know. They just didn't. And maybe it is due to that, right? Maybe they didn't give these guys enough time to learn these characters. Maybe they haven't done much with, hey, we know these characters are going to be here, but we don't have a clear direction on what they're going to be doing yet. So I'm sure they were handcuffed with that a little bit. So I'm not going to necessarily blame them completely for that, although, you know, they did their own failures in this regard. Excalibur, like I said, his mistakes, I will give him more, did sound more like just not knowing what to say or do. So I'm clearly not like throw the bums out, not going to give it another chance.
Except for that Alex guy.
I definitely think.
Except for that Alex guy needs to go. Because especially if you're going to say that your product is not going to be the PG wholesome family thing, then you got to get fucking the wholesome guy out of there.
That whole commentary the whole time felt like it was 89 McMahon and fill in the blank wrestler who happens to be hurt are commentating an event, right? The whole thing felt like that, where it was, what a maneuver. So, like, it was just like
And so let's get into more other general thoughts.
Yes.
It was widely accepted as a success, like I stated. One thing that I also liked about the event is not since TNA tried to go live on Monday has it felt like there was a real competitor to WWE, yes. Right? If you remember when TNA went live on Monday night, that was the debut of Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff, which now, you know, 9 years later, you could say like whatever. But at that time, you thought maybe this is WCW 2.0, right? They did Angle and AJ Styles to close out the show. You had the first ever match between RVD and Sting. You had some debuts of other guys that were just, you know, coming up on the scene. So it felt something cool. WWE squashed that by saying Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels for the first time since the Montreal Screwjob are going to reunite and hug. So that kind of killed that. But with this event, it felt like, oh shit, this looks and feels like a real competitor. The setup was cool. The chips on the side of the set, the entrances of guys like the Young Bucks and Cody made it feel like this is a real pay-per-view that I'm watching, not a wrestling product that's in a big arena. So it felt great. The other thing I'll say is I feel like it was also a success because people wanted it to be a success. Yes. There's a lot of things that they did where if it happened in WWE, we would be murdering them for it. For example, yes. Luchasaurus, a goddamn dinosaur. Yeah. Put Luchasaurus in next year's Royal Rumble. See how that goes over. Glacier, put Glacier in the fucking Royal Rumble. See how that goes over.
Put Luchasaurus as a WWE-born idea. And so now if we took Luchasaurus, I think he's got a following now.
Yeah.
And you throw him in WWE. Right. But let them come up with an idea just like that.
Yeah.
Right. Just
put Lars
like
Sullivan as Luchasaurus.
Right.
And see how that happens. See what happens.
That shit would be
murdered.
Yeah. It would be Twitter flame.
Right. But we go, oh, it was so cool. And I'm not saying he was the highlight because he wasn't, but he was someone that no one booed. Right. And he got a big push during that battle royal. So, you know, he was someone. And then they announced that he got signed. It's a fucking dinosaur in 2019. And I'm not saying like pro wrestling can't have a fucking dinosaur. But what I'm saying is if pro wrestling can have a fucking dinosaur, then goddamn, you can have Lars Sullivan be the fucking weirdo that just murders the Attitude Era. Like, stop hating on WWE just because it's an attitude thing. You're just wanting to hate things in WWE that aren't that bad and then going, it's so cool in AEW just because it's counterculture. Like, there were great things that happened in AEW. And let's talk about that because I feel like we're kind of coming off on the wrong foot here. My biggest takeaway from Double or Nothing was – so I'll say the Cody Dustin match was amazing. We'll get into that. The Jericho Omega match was not as good as their first one, but still very good. And then, you know, the Jon Moxley thing. You had the debut of Awesome Kong. That was really cool for the women's division to kind of get the first shot of adrenaline as far as like, oh shit, anything can happen. A lot of those things were great. But for me, the biggest takeaway was MJF. Holy shit, this guy is good. I've talked about him on this podcast before. He did Sam Roberts podcast. He was in all those the BTE YouTube series where he's like Cody's best friend telling the Young Bucks to fuck off, all that stuff. He hit a home run in every segment he was in. The first thing he did in the Battle Royal was go after, I believe his name was Devin Thomas, the amputee, and said, Lieutenant Dan, you don't belong here. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that was so great. Yeah, first of all, it started with the kickoff and the casino buy-in. I mean, I was like, what a cast of characters. I mean, I was just like almost in chuckles at it, but I was still enjoying it, right? I was like, I mean, they've got a legless guy for fuck's sake.
We had Sonny Kiss in there. Yeah, Sonny Kiss. He was openly gay guy. That was another one.
So, I mean, there's all that fun. And then, what is the guy's name? Romero?
Rocky Romero? Ace Romero?
Ace Romero, right? Right? When he launched, like a little dude.
And that little guy is great.
Out of the ring. Like,
that little guy is in MLW, and he's really good. I can't remember his name right now. Marco. I think his name is Marco. So right. we don't fact check here on this podcast. So. But yeah, it was great. But I thought MJF just murdered it. Now, mm-hmm. Hangman Page won it. Hangman Page had his match canceled with Pac because Pac apparently just hates fucking losing, or maybe the promotion now is coming out. Maybe it's not his decision. Yep. It was the promotion's decision. He's under contract with them. We don't know, but his match got canceled. He ends up winning the Battle Royal, but I thought the star of it throughout the entire night was MJF. Even when Glacier came in and he started doing the like fake karate in front of him, I thought that was fun. The one guy though that I will say I felt like almost got overshadowed or maybe didn't capitalize 100% on his moment was Sean Spears, aka Ty Dillinger. Mm-hmm. I felt like he could have really made that something huge, and not to say he didn't have a great moment, right? The crowd chanted 10 with him.
Yeah, it was huge for about a second.
Right, but then if you talk about the great moments of the night, he doesn't really come up, right?
Lost.
But going back to MJF, just absolutely going forward into the event, remember what he did to Bret Hart when Bret Hart unveiled the title? And he's like, Bret, oh my God, the fan! Like,
oh my God,
and it made Bret even crack. And I just thought, MJF coming out of Double or Nothing. I want MJF versus everybody. MJF versus Moxley.
Yeah.
MJF versus Jericho is on paper just seems like the perfect matchup, especially if Jericho's the babyface where he's like a asshole kind of babyface. Mm-hmm. That just screams funny.
Yeah. I do think there's a lot of great talent there for them to set up some great storylines, some great things for us to have. I am worried about them losing steam between now and then.
Well, they're doing,
it's a ways out.
Yeah, but they're doing enough fun things here. Yeah. Let's get into another great match though. Probably the moment of the night happened after arguably the best match of the night. That was Cody versus Dustin. What did you think of the match? And what did you think about the hug afterwards?
Match was very well done. I mean, the story they told in it, it was, I just thought the match was exquisite, especially for his age and some of the spots he was pulling. We talked about it before. I mean, Dustin Rhodes is, I mean, a genetic wonder considering what he's done to his body, both from an, internal and external factor over the years. It's amazing that he can even move, let alone move the way he did, and tell that story. And yes, I mean, there's so much history there with that family that they didn't even have to really hit on that much to still tell an amazing story in that regard, which is some of the thing that gets unsaid about it. Like, they could have went all in on their father and made that a major focal point of the storyline, and it really wasn't hardly
any. Yeah, they had the Dusty chant to start off the match. Dustin pointed up, presumably to the heavens.
But even in the build-up.
What did you think of Cody's entrance? I thought it was kind of mishandled. This is where Vince McMahon, even though he's known as the micromanager, and we learned about that from John Moxley on Jericho's podcast, you'll catch our thoughts on that in the second segment. But that was one of those details where I think Vince would have nailed that, or Triple H, you know, whoever that is, and AEW kind of messed up. And this is what I mean by it. So you have them walk out past the chair or whatever we're thrown, walk down, get the sledgehammer, walk back up, hit it. By that time, your music's done, so you have to restart the music and then walk back down. Again, that's nitpicking. I would have had, and again, I can do it better than you, tweet the table, say I can't, I don't care. I would have had, because they had two entrances, which, side note, I thought was really cool, right? Having one guy enter from one silo and then the other competitor from the other one, kind of TNA old school Impact callback there. I would have had Brandy with the sledgehammer and Cody, and as they meet in the middle at the top of the entrance, then Brandy just hands the sledgehammer to Cody. Cody then whap, hits the damn thing and then goes.
I'd have done it after the match, and I would have like displayed it there, because the symbolism is you don't deserve this throne to the industry, Triple H, right? Like, this isn't yours to have, right? and I wouldn't have had it exploded. Like the explosion you was hit weak. It with the sledgehammer and it crumbles. I wouldn't even explode it, even if you had a good one. It crumbles. You don't hit a stone thrown and it explodes.
Yeah.
That's like the Ambrose versus Wyatt thing when they, you know, he unplugged a monitor and exploded in his face, right? Because that's what happens when you unplug something, right? Yeah, like it just, I was like, ah, guys. And that one, I think, was maybe the second or third of a, I'd say a handful of things that I noticed at the night of. All I kept hearing is, we're not trying to compete with WWE, but the rest of the night was, fuck you, WWE, right? Like, okay, guys, which is it? Like, I agree with you either way you go here, right? But pick one and go with it.
And then the main event of the night, and again, a lot of really good other matches there. SCU was really fun. They were really good. Well, I guess one match that I kind of glossed over, and it's just because it's not my style. Say whatever you want. Wrestling's big. I don't have to like everything. But the other big marquee match of the night was the Lucha Bros versus the Young Bucks. Again,
that was a good match.
I don't like that kind of match. I don't like the let's hold hands. I'm going to half slap you in the chest. Run with me as I run up the stairs and then do an arm drag. And that hurts.
Right.
No, it doesn't. That's fucking stupid.
Right. It crosses the line for me to Jackie Chan movie stunt work.
Yeah. Right? And the thing is, Jackie Chan stunt work looks awesome in a movie, but that's because you have 15 different angles. But when I see one of the Young Bucks just hanging out on the top of the rope, like waiting, and then like, and one time, I think it was Pentagon Jr., I can't remember which Lucha Bro it was, or maybe it was Phoenix, but they go to do a big move where Matt Jackson does like a reverse DDT off the top rope as I think it was Phoenix is on the other brother's shoulders, and Phoenix audibly, well, I guess audibly is a sound, but visually you see him look at Matt Jackson and nod that he's ready. And then they go again. I know, like, The choke slam from Luchasaurus on Joey Janela. Joey Janela was starting to look at the table before he got thrown. I can forgive that because that's a safety thing. And I can forgive this a little bit because it's a safety thing. But also, if you have to fucking nod at someone, maybe don't do the goddamn move. Like, that's the point.
Yeah.
Or do the fucking move and have it pin 1, 2, 3. But if you're going to do this amazing move and kick out at 2, fuck off.
Yeah, you know what I'm also done with, and I want to shake some people because I want to be like, what? Why is this so cool to you? Because you're not explaining it to me. Is the where all of this seems born out of is it's not just a clothesline, right? It's going to be, I'm going to try a super kick. You're going to duck it. Then you're going to try to roll up. I'm going to kick out of the roll up. Then I'm going to leap over you. You're going to do a thunder roll. And when you pop up, then I'm going to clothesline you. When you could have just fucking clothesline him and told me the same story and it didn't look fake as shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference.
Yeah. And for me, I am not into the parkour pro wrestling where
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Where, you know,
what I just explained.
Exactly.
Right.
You can run a straight line or you could run, hop to the left, jump over a curb, come back, but you still got down the straight line. Like, just fucking fight.
Right.
Again, we know that this isn't a real fight, right? We can watch MMA and we can say like an elbow from the top rope is not fucking real.
Right.
However, we're suspending our disbelief and it can only go so far.
Yeah.
Again, when you're nodding at your opponent, like, you can go now. That's when you got to fucking, I don't know, rein it in a little bit.
Yeah.
Again, it was a fine match. I know that there was plenty of people that liked it. It happened. It was good. Let's go back real quick. And I know we're jumping around here, but one thing I want to touch on that makes zero sense. And again, we hate on WWE when there's no continuity, right? Oh, God damn it. This doesn't make no fucking sense, right? Yeah. Oh, we love to tweet till our fingers are fucking red about continuity errors in fucking WWE. But All Elite Wrestling gets away with it? No, I'm calling bullshit. Here's where I'm calling bullshit. So that moment between Cody and Dustin where Cody says, I don't need a partner, I don't need a friend, I need my older brother, and they hug, perfect. Loved it. I mean, that is awesome.
Yep.
I fought with my brother to where we are bloody, not as bloody as Dustin, but we've been bloody and then going like, what the fuck are we doing? Let's hug.
Right.
Done that plenty of times, right? Here's the part that I fucking go, Huh? Their next event, Cody states, again, this is not press release, whatever, you know, Cody Reynolds. This is, you know, pro wrestler Cody in the ring after a match. Cody states, at the next event, I signed my name to take on the best tag team in the world, the Young Bucks. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. You guys are just fighting for fun? Right. You guys are executive vice presidents, yeah. And now we're just fighting for fun?
Right. It's a benefit show.
What? Fight anyone. Why are you fighting your friend?
Benefit show.
I'm not fighting you.
Yeah,
if it's a benefit show,
that
makes zero sense.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Unless it's for to crown the first AEW champion, I get that, right? Like, hey, I want to be champion. You want to be champion. We understand what comes along with being a champion. Let's fucking fight over it. I get that. But if it's just like, hey, you know what would be fun? Me punching you in the fucking face. No, it's not. And it just, that's zero, yeah. That makes zero fucking sense.
Hey, winners get the corner offices. The losers get the offices down the hallway, further away from the bathrooms. Like, put something on the line.
Yeah. Why would you just want to fist fight your executive vice president, who is your best friend? Yeah.
Again, now you're crossing the line of, oh, is this not a real thing? Is that why you're doing this? Right.
Oh, one other thing that I saw leading up to this is fake Bailey. I can't remember her name, but she was in the four-way match. Mm-hmm. She said
Smiley Riley or whatever. Yeah.
One thing that I just want to point out, because it's a frustration, is she goes, I hate that wrestlers have gimmicks. I want to show that I can be a genuine person. Hey, Smiley fake Bailey, you can't be a fucking genuine person and then do a top elbow drop. That's not fucking real. Go watch a real fight. If you want to be a genuine person and impact the world by genuine acts, go join a nonprofit. But if you want to be a pro wrestler, you have a gimmick.
Well,
you're
and here's
an
the thing. I don't hate that wrestlers have gimmicks. What I will give you is that not all of them need one, and nor should every single one of them have them. Some should just have an angle. Some should be a character that just have an angle. Some should be a much more clearly defined over-the-top gimmick, right? And some should be less some. That's what a spectrum is called, right? Like, and that's where you're going to have more storytelling options in that regard. But what regular person, no, right? I want a character at least, right?
Yeah, you have to be someone because you're an actor. You're not a real person in that ring. Like, you get what I'm saying. You're obviously a real person. You breathe and bleed and all that. Yeah.
Now, but maybe
like,
your character is a real person, quote unquote, right? My character is Dean Ambrose. I'm this guy.
John Moxley.
But here's my angle. Dean Ambrose is, John Moxley is fucking crazy. And he might stab you when you're not looking, right? Like, that's the angle, right?
We went off on some tangents again. Let's get back on track.
I still thought the show was great. I do. In that moment with Sean Spears, I was like, holy fuck, they can run with this. And I started thinking, I was like, I don't think WWE necessarily dropped the ball. It's because of his time with WWE and the character that he was trying to get over there that made his draw so big out there now, and people wanting to be like, finally, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so it wouldn't have happened had they not put him through that.
Now, you said Sean Spears, or do you mean John Moxley?
No, Sean Spears.
Okay.
I'm talking about his moment in the buy-in where, I mean, they're chanting him and he's fucking just taking it all in. I was like, oh, they might have captured lightning in a bottle, right? But then I was like, oh, WWE should have ran with this and that, but it wouldn't have been the same, right? It wouldn't. I mean, they started trying.
Well, it's an attitude thing,
right?
Yeah.
It is an attitude thing. It's a willingness from the fans,
yeah. So now let's get into the main event, and then we'll take a quick break after this and then get into the big podcast of the week besides ours, because we are the biggest podcast in pro wrestling history. In the main event was Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho gets the win with a new finisher called the Judas Effect, which is a spinning back elbow. So Chris Jericho gets the pinfall win, which means in the future, and again, a thing that we would kill WWE for because we didn't give a date. We just said in the future, but in the future, for the first, I presume, first AEW champion, we will have Hangman Page versus Chris Jericho. First off, what do you think of that matchup to crown your first champion?
I think it'll be good, and I think Jericho in his promo that they, you know, kind of played in the lead up about him saying like AEW, like you need me as champion. I was kind of like, yeah, he might be a little right. You know what I mean? Like, he is the big name that drew any portion of the mainstream media interest they have, a large 90% of it's probably due to his name. So there is something to that.
Well, I like the matchup for this reason. It's the veteran versus the newcomer. And in this specific case, if the newcomer loses, which I would think he would, it's not going to hurt the character. He can come right back from this and be the cowboy, the hangman, hangman Adam Page, right?
If Jericho cheats to win.
Right. And then the history books for AEW can say our first ever champion was, you know, the GOAT, Chris Jericho. Because you never know, and we have plenty of examples in WWE of this, but Adam Page, Hangman Adam Page, could fizzle, right? Could be a flop.
Yeah, right.
So you want to say that your first ever champion was the GOAT, Chris Jericho. And by Adam Page losing, it doesn't look bad because he lost to Chris Jericho. Well, and so it's a win-win for everyone, assuming that. But again, you could go counterculture and say, Hangman Adam Page, look at this. He beat the GOAT, the WWE veteran. Like, there's not a lose situation in the storytelling.
Look, you could even do an angle where Omega cost Jericho the match and leads to their third installment down the road.
Exactly.
And it's still, you know what I mean? And then you can still. Yeah, I mean, there's always you could go, but I do think even Jericho damn sure knows how to make a guy like Hangman Page look amazing even when he beats him. So,
definitely.
I definitely think that's good. And then, of course, we had the big reveal moment. The Moxley comes out. I like Jericho turns around, and I just like how he's like, what are you doing here? You don't work here.
Hey, you asshole. I got away from you. What are you doing here? Why are you following me?
And I love how Dean's just like, what? Or, you know, Johnny's like, what? Fuck it, right? And then he's just like, the ref too. Fuck it, right? Like, just everybody. You get a fucking whatever he's going to call it.
It
was fun.
I liked everything that I saw in the ring on the pay-per-view. I liked how Kenny Omega fought back, right? Like, he wasn't this punk-ass bitch that just took a finisher. He fought and gave some offense, right? The iconic. I think if AEW becomes something, I think the most iconic photo was taken from a friend of the show, Ryan Loco, who's been on the show as a guest, where you see in the Jumbotron or whatever, Kenny Omega broken and battered, and then John Moxley standing on the chips with his hands just like basking in the glory. That is iconic.
The one I liked of his shot was the one of Jericho front up in the front of the camera, but blurred, and you see Moxley coming down the steps in the back, and the fans freaking out. One of the most amazing pictures I've seen of a wrestling thing ever.
Ryan Loco, if you've never seen any of his pro wrestling shots, check him out. Ryan Loco, RyanLoco.com. He's got shots of Becky Lynch, Sonya Deville. We've interviewed him. He's been on the podcast. Take some other amazing shots. Check out his work. But yeah, those two shots I thought were amazing.
So regarding Moxley, and after we come back from break, we're going to talk a lot more about him because we're going to talk about his interview that was released today on the Jericho podcast. So stay tuned for that. Regarding him, though, I want to bring up something that I am honestly somewhat worried about regarding this Moxley character in AEW and their clear direction that they're going to make him a big deal, right? I mentioned this to the guy at work who's a bit of a casual wrestling fan, has been off the train for a while just because it sucks, right? And it's boring. He's like, dude, I got too much shit going on with kids that are 15 to deal with this. And I'd mentioned the whole time, like, hey, Ambrose is leaving AEW. And he's been like, man, I might want to see some of this. And I said, hey, did you see John Moxley, Dean Ambrose show up? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, dude, can I just be honest about this guy? And he's like, I don't know that I really like him. And I was like, why? And it's the same things that I've caught for. He's like, he does the same thing over and over again. He walks in, he kind of got that head wobble, and his match, he bounces around through the ropes. He does the same shtick, the same routine. And he goes, it feels like the same tired, over dramatic, done, I'm fake crazy routine all the time. And I was like, well, I can see that. I can absolutely see that. Absolutely.
But maybe he does go full crazy because now he has that license to an AEW, right?
Yes,
like one
maybe,
thing that we used.
Yes.
Yeah. One thing that we liked a lot, if you remember leading up to his match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, which sucked. But the lead up to that was all of these hardcore icons like Mick Foley and Terry Funk almost passing the blessing of Psycho to him. And then, unfortunately, he couldn't go full Psycho. But maybe he can. So I think the history of WWE, because he's essentially the same character so far in one night, what we saw.
Right.
So maybe he's something different. But what we saw in the ring was Dean Ambrose, but just we can't call him Dean Ambrose. I think the history of WWE has tainted us with, well, fuck, is he going to come out with a goddamn potted plant again or, you know, some bullshit like that? But hopefully, I'm being optimistic. Maybe he can finally say, like, no, the fucking shit I want to do is this. And we go like, oh, goddamn, he is nuts. Like,
well, and that's it. I told him, I said, well, hey, man, I said, here's what we know about this guy now, you know, John Moxley, Dean Ambrose. And this is before the interview came out. I was like, he should not have really been in WWE. I was like, it is not his place. Mm-hmm. He was never going to like it. They were never going to be open to him doing the things he wants. I was like, he is much more of the cut you open, hardcore match, let's drag out and go nuts, push the envelope kind of guy. And I was like, so I think this might be a better place for him. And yeah, we'll get way more into this after we come back in the break because Jon Moxley himself addresses that.
Well, I want to share one thing, though. And again, I hate to harp, but I want to say again, this, the good positives before I say this, just because I want people to understand, I really did enjoy this, but felt like a real competitor. WWE, a lot of things were great. There was an A. Again, though, some of the attitude that we say, oh, fuck off, WWE, we need to also apply it to AEW because double standards are fucking bullshit. But in the promo, and Kata even kind of said this to me, he's like, because I said, I don't get that fucking promo that he cut where he's like, no one's going to stand in my way or AEW's way. And I was like, well, then why'd you fucking attack the vice president?
Yeah, right.
If no one's going to stand in AEW's way, the fuck are you going after him for? Like, that makes, he's your boss. Fuck are you doing, dum-dum? Like, again, but you're causing havoc. Okay, but what are we doing? Like, is your war... It just makes no sense because it seemed like it was a shot at WWE, but again, you're not there anymore, pal. Like, then fuck off and tell me why you're in AEW beating up Kenny Omega. That's what I wanted to hear. But what I heard was, is I'm going to be crazy and AEW is going to take over. Well, that didn't make sense if you just beat up the vice president.
Like, yeah, right. Yeah.
That's the continuity thing that we're talking about here where, hey, again, I'm giving you a pass. I'm going to watch again. I'm going to watch your match with Bad Boy Joey Janela at the next event. I'm going to watch Cody. I'm going to watch the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, all that stuff. But let's just say there's some things here where we can work on, and that's one of them. You can't say I'm a lunatic fringe, or he didn't say lunatic fringe, but he says I'm going to, you know, cause havoc and no one's getting in AEW's way, but I'm going to beat up the boss because that's what we do here. That doesn't make sense.
And more to follow, man. We're going to talk more about this after the break. We're going to talk about this really damn good interview with Jericho, with Moxley on Jericho's podcast. And we're also going to talk about NXT 25 is coming up. We're going to make some predictions on that. And so we'll do that when we come back from this break to the Spanish Announce Table.
Fun fact, the company Heaven Above Fireworks is a company that turns your ashes into fireworks after you die. So you can literally go out with a bang.
The Spanish Announce Table.
Tom.
Tim.
Did you also know that we have our own merchandise for sale?
I did know that. Mm-hmm. I actually have a t-shirt and a sweatshirt. And coming soon, once I get done with all these medical bills, thanks, government and healthcare, I'm going to get me a coffee mug, a Spanish Announce Table coffee mug.
Tom's so broke, he can't even drink his coffee, folks. That's why you need to go to SpanishAnnounceTable.net and look for the link that says Merch Table up there. It'll take you to our Zazzle page.
Zazzle.
That's Zazzle, but it's just easy to go to SpanishAnnounceTable.net and click the link. And then there's all kinds of stuff, man. There's shirts. There's a deck of cards. I think there's a flask, maybe? I don't even remember.
Coffee mugs, phone covers, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats,
various designs,
any and everything you can think of, we got it. Click the link, SpanishAnnounceTable.net.
So do it, SpanishAnnounceTable.net, Spanish Announce Merch Table. Check it out.
The Spanish Announce Table.
All right, Tim. So now let's get into the other big topic of the week. Not only was Double or Nothing a big success, but it looks like from early indications, there was a big success at Talk is Jericho, the podcast hosted by pro wrestling legend Chris Jericho, as he had the emancipation of Jon Moxley.
Yeah.
It was about an hour and some change, under 2 hours, but, you know, a little over two, 1 hour. He goes into kind of a timeline as far as when he wanted to quit, when he actually was going to quit and maybe walk out, why he didn't, some of the success that he had there, and some of his frustrations. So after listening to The Emancipation of John Moxley, what were your early reactions to it?
My solid biggest takeaway is, and it more centers on WWE, is that it, you guys are going to have to pull the trigger and find a way to get Vince out the door of creative, because this is not going away. He breaks down to detail everything we feared, right? Mm-hmm. The writers and the talent know way better on what will get over and what is cool in 2019 than Vince McMahon ever has the hope to anymore. And it's not a stubbornness that we're going to talk him out of. It's not a light bulb moment that he's going to flip a switch and be like, oh my God, oh yeah, we should be doing this instead. It's time to tell him you can't do this anymore. He may very well still have years in him of being a great CEO of the company, but as head of creative, it's got to be done.
Well, and I think, yeah, and I think he also can, you know, one of the stories that I always think of with Vince McMahon in the later years that shows that he still is a genius. And one of the things that John Moxley kind of did is he goes, a so-called genius. Like, Vince McMahon is a pro wrestling genius. Like, there's a route, a Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling geniuses. It's Dusty Rhodes, Vince McMahon, Paul Heyman. You know, there's a short list, and Vince is definitely on there. But where I think Vince would be better served is, going back to the story that I think of, is when Chris Jericho came up with Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
His version of Money in the Bank was not as good as Vince McMahon's version of Money in the Bank, right? Vince took the idea of, you know, a contract above the ring in a ladder match and changed it from just some cardboard, you know, some slip of paper on a little, you know, clipboard, and turned it into a briefcase that was branded that can be used as a weapon.
He knows how to make it grandiose.
Yeah, that is where I feel Vince McMahon has always been the best, right?
Turn it up.
Even look at the very first iteration of a pro wrestling boom. Vince McMahon didn't do a lot of those things, right? Junkyard Dog was Junkyard Dog before WWE.
Hulk Hogan was essentially Hulk Hogan, right?
Well, Hulk Hogan was Hulk Hogan in Minnesota.
Right.
Macho Man was Macho Man in his own father's promotion. Yep. But he took those things and said, like, you know what I can do with it? I can turn up the volume. Right. I can tweak this little thing. I can add this. And then boom, we're off, right? Like, that is where I've always felt Vince McMahon's better at than, hey, you know what? This promo needs to have Pooper Scooper in it. That was a big thing that John Moxley talked about. That is where I think, as you stated, we need to push Vince out of the way. He doesn't need to have final say in necessarily promos of every Monday and Tuesday TV show. Where I think he needs final approval is, hey, we're going to pull the trigger with Rusev as our Intercontinental Champion.
Oh, yeah.
What would you do to get that accomplished? Okay, well, this is what I would do.
Consultation. Yes, he should be a consultant to Triple H's ideas or whomever, creative, right? Like, that he can do that, you know what I mean, without having to go through the grueling nonsense that he's going through on it at his age. Mm-hmm. And just, like, it was frustrating me so bad to hear all this because, like, like, some of these things that Dean was, you know, is Jonathan Good, right? Is his real name?
Yeah, his real name.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yep. John. I'm going to call him John. What John is saying here is that, like, some of the things that he's saying, this is a bad idea, we should have been doing this instead, or I would have suggested this instead. And I'm like, yeah, these are basic pro wrestling tenets. Like, when he's like, it's not a bad idea. Like, when he was like, the thing handwritten where that he saw that, like, Dean needs to understand why he needs to be insulting the audience and he needs to read his promos verbatim. Dean fully understood why he was supposed to be insulting the audience, but he's saying the way you're having me do it doesn't make any sense because it's not getting the character over. It's not building a storyline. It's not doing anything. It's just insulting this particular city right now. You know, he didn't say exactly these things, but that's what he's getting at. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, what's making me mad is that, like, Vince and the WWE, they've known this. You knew this before. Why do you not know it now? You know why I knew you knew it before is because, Vince, goddammit, you're the one that taught us all of this. Mm-hmm. Like, you're the one that taught us all of this. Mm-hmm. And now, as John's saying, for 6 to 8 years, he's got to go in and talk where he's got no power and he's got to act like a servant to a 70-year-old mm-hmm. man and tell him why this is not going to work and this is not going to help anything and it's just going to stall everything and make no sense. And he kept right. getting told, Toph, this is why it's great. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
Well, and I think age is also a huge thing. You mentioned 70-year-old man.
Yeah.
And when I listened to the podcast, that was another big takeaway that I took from it is, you know, pooper scooper was a fun, insulting kind of thing to say in the 1980s.
Nobody even knows what that is anymore. Like, it's not.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's not a thing anymore. It even goes back to currently right now what the Usos are doing to the revival. How I told you, like, acceptance is the cool thing. Separation is the bad thing. Like, that's the heel move, is to be a bully. And the Usos are, but in the 1980s, it was funny to see someone shaving another man's back. Oh, do you get it? They're naked in a shower, shaving it. Like, that's a 1980s, you know, Revenge of the Nerds type of mentality that isn't funny anymore. Yeah. It's not funny anymore, but you still think it is because that was your comedy in the 1980s. And that's where, like you said, we need to have Triple H or even someone a little younger to say, like, hey, here's the cool things to say. It's not pooper scooper. It's things like that. And the frustration that I heard, honestly, was a lot like the pipe bomb yeah. promo mm-hmm. that CM Punk said, where, you know, John was giving a lot more detail, but CM Punk was saying a lot of these same things
yes.
6 years ago or however long it was.
Right.
And now you're starting to see, like, hey, man, that was 6 years ago. And now you have another top 10 talent that's saying the same thing and left as well. Like, you have to see the writing on the wall.
You said it a while back that you think the downfall of everything was WWE going corporate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I still 100% believe that.
And I fully give it to you because in that regard, it's when they stopped allowing the artist to have that creative control and that free the creative license, as Moxley kept talking about. It's that. They won't let them do that because they might say something that's going to hurt their corporate interests. So now they're going to script these things. They're going to do these things. And they've even come out and leaked as such that they're actively now trying to make sure they don't create the next John Cena or the next Hulk Hogan, or the next mm-hmm. Steve Austin, because they don't want to be hung out to dry by that person. So we're not going to get it. We're just not going to get it.
Everything's pushed to a C plus because then you get 10 C pluses instead of 1 A, you know, home run type of thing.
Roman Reigns goes down. We can do Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins goes down.
Right. Because and
they can count on it. They know we're still going to get X amount of the game. We're still going to get X amount of the TV. And even though it's lower than we want it to be, it's lower than it could have been. Well, we can sit around a board meeting and figure out ways to bump that number up 5% and say, look at our growth and forget about it. And that's the situation that it's in. It is corporate. It won't be cool. And pro wrestling has to live in the cool. It has to live in the cool.
Mm-hmm. One thing that going specifically back to the podcast episode itself that I find interesting and full disclosure this today, I picked up Emily and we ran some errands because this coming week I'm going to Disney World. I'll share with mm-hmm. that next week what my experience was like. But I had the podcast on as I picked her up. And one of the things that Jon Moxley said that she caught was, oh, my God, I feel so free. Now I can just take over, you know, the world. And I'm paraphrasing here. And the first thing that Emily said was, well, yeah, you haven't done anything yet. Right. This is where, unlike CM Punk, we're going to start to see, hey, it's cool now that I get to do my own thing.
It better be good.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Because now Vince McMahon can sit there and say, like, yeah, all right, show me what you got. And now we're really going to see, because, you know, one thing that I've said on this podcast to you for years now is maybe it's a little bit of the talent, right? Maybe the talent doesn't have the charisma that they think they have.
This is where I'm at with Ambrose. Like, his strut around the ring, I'm like, dude, looks weak and fake as fuck.
Well, it looks exactly like Dean Ambrose.
Well, yeah, but that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, and so that's what I mean. Like, oh, so that's your doing. That's your whole bringing to the character, right? Nobody made you do that part because you're willingly doing that now, and you look like a weirdo who's faking it when you do that.
Well,
the whole, like, the whole, it's hard to explain on an audio podcast, but you know what I'm getting? The way over herky jerky movements and the, and the, like, head cocked to the side looking around shit. I'm like, dude, nobody actually, even an actual crazy person doesn't do it that animated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I
get the let's turn it up to 11, but it's just not working here. It's gone. You turn it up to 14 and it's gone too far for me.
Yeah. And we're popcorn kind of commenting here because
course.
It's a
armchair
fresh new
quarterback,
podcast.
Sure.
Well, and just some of the topics. But one thing I want to go back to is how you said, you know, WWE went back to corporate or once WWE went corporate, they kind of filled all their little spaces. One thing that's still stuck in my mind is when Cody asked for his release and he said to Triple H, "Hey man, I'm done being Stardust. This is stupid."
Yeah.
And the thing that stuck with me, because on Tuesday night on SmackDown, a sign was confiscated and it said, "Save us Triple H."
Right.
But I don't know if that's the problem. And I go back to the CM Punk promo where CM Punk said, you know, maybe this company will be better when Vince McMahon dies, but it's actually ran by buffoons like his daughter and brother-in-law. And now what I'm getting to is when Cody asked for his done character of Stardust, the first thing Triple H said to him is, "Hey, we have this role. It needs to be filled by you." Like, they already have roles, and Triple H is totally going along with that role.
Well, and that's just it. So I wonder at what point, like, Triple H may believe some of the shit, right? Because he's in those board meetings and he's there. The difference is, if he's in charge and Vince is gone, would the same conclusions be being come to? And maybe there is. Maybe some of that's brought up by the board members that aren't fucking wrestling people. And they're like, "No, we've got to do this because it's going to increase our demo and the 18 to 35 females, and they have buying power," whatever the fuck stupid reason they have for doing decisions,
right?
Instead of being fucking cool.
My point is, right? But what my point is when Cody says to Triple H, "Hey, I'm done with this," and again, this is Cody's point of view, so we haven't heard the other side of the story. There's two sides to a story. I'm just telling you what we've heard. But when Cody says to Triple H, "Hey, man, I'm done," and Triple H doesn't say, "I get it, man. Can you give us two more, you know, can you help us out? I get that you're frustrated." Instead, he says, "This is a role that we want you to do." Maybe he's drinking the Kool-Aid too. That's my only concern is, you know, you had the CM Punk saying that in the pipe bomb promo where, you know, after Vince is dead, these same problems are going to be here. You have Cody saying, "I'm going to Triple H," and he's saying, "Still fill this role." And then you have John Moxley leaving saying, like, the creative structure, because that's one point that he also said. He goes, after 2002 when Vince bought WCW, it couldn't be not just only Vince, it could be the whole structure he's created, which could be a part of Triple H's, you know, influence in there, could all need to be it all needs to go away. And maybe Triple H needs to go away as well.
Well, so, and let me just explain why it may still be the same problem, and I'm going to break it down again. Like, the corporate entity that is WWE and how they operate differently. And you can argue it's a valid way to operate if this is the angle you want to take, if you're the corporate mentality, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to force the Stardust, right? Like, he wants to stop doing it because it's not enjoyable for him. He doesn't like it, right? It's played out, right? It's just not cool.
Mm-hmm.
They go, "We want you to play this role. This is our fourth selling largest merchandise. We built the merchandising and put you in the role, right? Like, we replaced Sin Cara. We might replace the Stardust. This is not what it's about. It's not about the coolest thing we can put out there so we get the most ratings. This is about money. And that's it. Now, AEW might take in less money, but their goal here is, we want to put out a better product to get better ratings, to be you know, more internationally liked, right? So now you can argue both sides, right, either way, but I can tell you which one is a more enjoyable product, right? And so that's where I worry, like, we're not going to get that from WWE until that thing starts losing money and the corporates start buying out and they've got to buy that thing back private. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think I just don't,
you have to let
don't
it,
see it.
You have to let it burn it down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Seth Rollins.
Yeah,
you have to,
I just don't see it. I just don't see
but
it.
That's, Yeah, that's just the thing that's been sticking in my mind after hearing John Moxley on this podcast, after hearing CM Punk, mm-hmm. you know, do his pipe bomb X amount of years ago, hearing Cody talk about his own ask for release when he was on the Sam Roberts podcast, is it could just be more. It's probably more than just Vince needs to retire. It could be the whole structure of the thing. And like we've stated, WWE going corporate and having stockholders to answer to, right? AEW doesn't have to do that. So if they want to say, hey, guess what? We're going to throw in three middle fingers in the first hour, as long as TNT kind of gives that okay, because they do have to answer to TNT, like, then they're going to do three middle fingers. And so, yeah. I think this is great. I think the John Moxley thing seems it was very revealing to me, because I've kept on being skeptical, saying like, I just don't think Vince is that overbearing still. Apparently I'm wrong. Again, we're only hearing John Moxley's side. We haven't heard Vince McMahon's side, but it was very fascinating. And now it makes a little bit more sense where how he was saying, like, I was brain dead even when we were working in 2016. Because what's the one thing that he always catches shit for in his WWE tenure is when Stone Cold was like, hey, you little fucking piece of shit, like, do something. And now that we have this new perspective, it was like, well, he's done. Like, that's why he's an asshole to you, Stone Cold, is because he doesn't want to do any of this anymore.
Right.
Like, he's out of here. Because the John Moxley, as far as this was a shoot interview and so was the Stone Cold, John Moxley and Dean Ambrose sounded nothing alike.
Oh,
you
right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Dean Ambrose seemed distracted, uninterested, kind of wanting to wrap this up, and John Moxley couldn't shut up.
Yeah, I've heard him on like Colt Cabana's interview in the past, or shows in the past stuff, and like I've heard the real, you know, John Good kind of speaking. That's where I knew, like, I was like, WWE is not the place for him when I heard him there, because I knew he was that aloof guy who would have a one bedroom apartment that's got like a mattress on the floor, and you know what I mean, like eats on milk crates. Like, he's that guy, like, because he's just gone, right? Like, he's not there, he doesn't have a TV, that kind of dude, right? Like,
yeah. And
one
of the best parts of the whole podcast was when he told Seth Rollins that this is like the end at the end of Harry and the Hendersons, when Harry goes back into the forest right. and he sees all of the other Sasquatches. It's like, yeah, Harry doesn't need to be with the people.
Right.
He needs to be with his own kind. Like, it feels cool and it's neat and it has a, you know, honeymoon phase with the people. But where he really belongs is in the wild with the other Sasquatches. And just like to your point, yeah, I think Dean Ambrose, I don't think that his main beef in WWE was that he never main evented WrestleMania. His main beef is he couldn't be an artist to say, I'm going to wear pink tonight, because fucking pink is what this character would do. You know,
yeah.
That creative freedom was his biggest thing.
That's what he kept saying, was like, the one that stuck out to me was what they need to recognize about all of them is, if I'm not allowed to come up with my own creative like angles and the way I would do things and how my character would react, and you just want me to read lines verbatim, find an actor, because they're going to do it better than I do. And that's where I kept saying, you got to start doing acting classes, because you're expecting these guys to act, and they're not doing like acting classes. They're not like sending them to acting colleges as part of this performance center. I was like, you better start doing that. Because you're asking them to remember verbatim lines, which involves looks and subtleties that come with acting training that wrestlers don't get.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
One other note that I found interesting that he stated that made me start to look at other wrestlers a little bit differently. And it was when he's talked about, you're just having us show up, say line A, line B, go out there, grab hold one, grab hold two, and then go to the next city, right? And he goes, this is the only thing I cared about. And I'm, again, paraphrasing here, but like, I love pro wrestling. This is the one thing I think about, and I don't want to have any other interest. And then you start to look at some of the other top guys, and they have other interests, right?
Right.
Seth Rollins has Dead Boy Fitness.
Yep.
Sheamus has his Celtic Warrior workouts.
Up down thing, right?
Yeah, up down down, and you're like, well, fuck.
They have to.
Are these guys like Stepford Wives, and like they're just doing that thing, and they have to use their creative freedom to do up up down down or Dead Boy Fitness? Like,
that's the thing, is what I want in pro wrestlers is it's the artist, it's what Steve Austin said. I couldn't fucking drive a forklift. I could not fucking do it. I had to do something like this. It wasn't going to, he would have killed himself trying to live that life. Mm-hmm. You force them to live that life. It's just a job. It's just a traveling job now, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got to have their escape from jobs. That's not what it's supposed to be. You're supposed to get the people who dream this, live this, think this. That's what the clique always talks about. Like, as soon as they left the fucking building, they were like, oh, you should have done this. Hey, what about this? What if we try this? What
right.
if we fucking? Mm-hmm. And that's all they fucking cared about. And that's why they were so much fucking more charismatic and better at it than the goddamn Young Bucks and the fucking other people that we shit on here, because they're not fucking doing that. They're mm-hmm. not fucking doing that. These guys are doing other things. You know what I mean? Maybe not the Young Bucks yeah. are a bad example because they're living this thing, but yeah. it's that Seth
Titus
Rollins.
O'Neil.
It's the Titus. Right. It's the everybody else. That's why Bray Wyatt is getting more attention right now, because you can tell he's living his every fucking moment thinking about his goddamn character and what they're letting him do with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the difference, is you're not allowing these guys to thrive. They have some better ideas than you do, Vince, if you're listening. But they have WWE seem to have all lost that, right? That these guys could potentially have the better idea.
Well, because they went corporate.
Mm-hmm.
We knew it all along. Spanish Announce Table told you this 5 years ago, that the biggest mistake was that they went public, and we're seeing it now. If you disagree with us, you're wrong. We're right. But it was a great podcast episode. Give it a listen. Talk is Jericho. Mm-hmm. It's called The Emancipation of Jon Moxley. He did a really, really good interview. Again, he didn't have to do much because Jon Moxley was ready to go. You know, he was yeah. ready to, like, I got some shit to say. I did like that he started off with the caveat of, like, look, I had like $9 in my pocket. I didn't know what the fuck. I saw the whole world. I met my soulmate and my wife. Yeah. I got to wrestle some amazing matches. The Shield was an incredible thing that I was a part of. You know,
royalties
I did good
forever
things.
From that.
Yeah, like royalties
for
forever
from that.
But fuck this. You know, like,
right.
and it makes sense. And I like it. And one other thing, last thing that I'll say is I did like his candid observation that, even though, you know, Vince McMahon is the godfather of pro wrestling as we know it today, like, him, Jon Moxley, and Vince McMahon, just that's not a good combination.
Yeah.
It's just not. And it's okay.
Well, and here's something
like
that,
it was a personal thing.
Well, and here's something that it's going to be hard. It's going to be – we're going to witness it by one way or another in our lives, something that we never have in our lives, but some people have. And knew a whole world of pro wrestling before Vince McMahon Jr. Mm-hmm. ever was involved. And there will be a time when he's not. He's going to die, or he's going to retire, and he just will not be. Yeah, he's more likely to die, and he won't be involved anymore. I mean, the pro wrestling world will go on. It is forever changed due to his influence. But what he's at the helm of now is suffering, I think, directly because he's still at the helm of it. As sad as that is to say, I just think it is. But here is WWE's version of what we've been talking about, right? Triple H is leading this. By all accounts, NXT is Triple H's thing. Vince doesn't even really know what's going on there from everything we've heard, right? So when they call up, he doesn't even want to hear what the goddamn storyline is, because he's not concerned, right? Like, he doesn't care. So, you know, most people give this glowing reviews, do they, NXT? We've kind of mentioned that maybe, but do we really know what's going on in the week to weeks? Like, is it really building excitement, or is it just because it's the NXT event, right? Like, so there's some of that.
No one ever talks about the viral moment in week three of NXT programming. Mm-hmm. It's always just NXT takeovers, and isn't this one character kind of cool?
Yeah, now there does seem to be a bit more focus on characters, right? I'll give it that. Mm-hmm. There is more of a focus on characters. Storylines, I want to say, are, you know, there is an attempt at more storylines. There's definitely less of, I'd say, gimmicks. NXT used to be a little more heavy in the stronger gimmicks. They do have a bit more now of what we said, just a bunch of dudes or ladies with an angle, right?
Yeah.
But this is the 25th of these takeover events, which are about quarterly, right? So we've been, what, 6 years or so into this now?
Feels that way, yeah.
Yeah, so... before we get into each match by match, I've got the card pulled up here. We got five matches here scheduled.
Well, did you
want to
take a quick break?
Do we need to take one? Didn't we take one? How much time we got? Because I think we'll get through this one. There's five matches, right? We've been rolling 25 minutes in this segment. Yeah, let's roll with it.
Then let's do it.
Yeah, this is, right? Unless you need a break? You need to go to the bathroom?
No,
anything
not at all.
Like that?
So,
yeah, what's your overall thoughts leading into this? Have you been paying attention? Do you know what's on the card? Are you excited for this?
I do know what's on the card. I've been paying casual attention. Again, I feel like I'm more of the general NXT fan than I am the hardcore NXT fan. One point that I'd like to make, what I was trying to state with the NXT week-to-week program, is, you know, Ricochet did that running front flip in front of Velveteen Dream. And since then, and this is my opinion, but there hasn't been any let's talk about moments on NXT programming. Now, takeovers is a completely different story, right? Those are grand slams every time. But I think if we were grading NXT the same way we grade Raw and SmackDown, maybe we wouldn't be so like, this is the best, this is so great, da 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 da, because they do well performed and well thought out continuity storytelling, but nothing's really blowing your socks off, is my point with the NXT programming, where we hold
Raw
and
SmackDown moment on Wednesday night NXT, right?
Right. But we hold Raw and SmackDown to this, it should be this. Oh my God, do you remember that? And why can't we get back to that? Where NXT and even AEW, we do this whole like, but it's not bad. Guys, it's not bad. Well, now takeovers are different again, but
we do hold Raw and SmackDown to this level of like, it better be pay-per-view quality every time
every
we see
week.
It. But
yeah.
Motherfuckers, you made them 3 and 2 hours long. So
yes.
I'm putting in that much time. And goddamn, if it's not, that means you're subjecting me to 3 hours of it not being that.
Yes.
Why would you do that to me?
Right. Yeah. And NXT takeover, or excuse me, NXT weekly programming is an hour.
It's not that. Right.
So,
exactly.
But again, I'm just saying, sometimes we go like, NXT is the best program. Right. What happened last week? Well, I didn't catch it, but I'm going to watch TakeOver this weekend. Yeah. And it's like, well, you motherfuckers, you guys watch Raw and SmackDown every second of it, and then you tell me how bad it is. So maybe do the same thing to NXT. But let's get into the five matches. So,
all right, the five matches.
I've been watching it. Adam Cole is still the coolest guy in the world to me. Johnny Gargano is the just truest baby face. I hated that little quick heel turn that he did. But now we're back on track. That's for the title. Love it. But let's start off with the first match and let's build to that. What do we got?
This is an interesting one. We've got the man that Charisma forgot, Roderick Strong, taking on Matt Riddle. I also agree, like, this is going to be a Kurt Angle level kind of guy. I think he's going to skyrocket here. He just seems to be getting it. Matt Riddle. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that guy. Love him. He is so much fun. Bro, I just love it. It's a fucking cool character.
Yeah.
I think Roderick Strong, because he's in a group, and you know, groups, when they do singles matches, kind of like a tag team, like a singles match for a tag team wrestler, they can lose it and still not lose really anything.
Right.
So I think this is a Roderick Strong is a man that Charisma is not a part of his DNA, but he can wrestle a really good match. I think this is going to be a good showcase for Matt Riddle, because he can do some fun things with someone he knows that can come up with some cool shit.
And Strong is a veteran, will know how to make sure he looks good and all of this, because we are there is to this. Matt Riddle has been doing this for a little bit of time, but it has been a little bit of time in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, Roderick Strong, I believe, if memory serves me correctly, him and AJ Styles was the first ever TNA match on TNA Impact on TNT.
Wow.
That tells you how long he's been doing it. And he was doing it long before that, too.
So then we've got the North American
Championship. But I got Matt Riddle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely have Matt Riddle in this. Although I could see Roderick Strong winning via some sort of, interference if they wanted to continue moving on with, you know, Riddle versus, you know,
that. Undisputed era.
Yeah. I mean, I know they're having some dissension in that regard, but so that might be a little off. But I definitely think Riddle's going to win, but it wouldn't shock me to see Strong win via something, you know.
Yeah.
All right. So the NXT North American Championship, Tyler Breeze takes on the champion, the Velveteen Dream. I don't see them just slapping this title belt on Tyler Breeze all of a sudden because he's back or anything, unless they're going to have Dream get into the world. Ooh. Yeah, maybe.
No, it's Dream. No, it's Dream. Yeah. One thing, though, that I want to applaud WWE on doing, though, is one thing that we've talked about is, hey, if you ain't got anything up in the main roster, come back. And Tyler Breeze did. So credit to him. Because look, Tyler Breeze is cool. One of Tyler Breeze's coolest moments was wrestling Juice and Thunder Liger on an NXT TakeOver. So TakeOver is really where he made his whole character and stuff. So, yeah, have him go back there.
And that's the thing is, like, that Tyler Breeze character will be allowed to give more time, albeit, like you're saying, there's not a whole lot of time in their one-hour shows for the characters to shine. But that character can shine more in that thing where there's less people, right? And he can do more subtlety things other than just being, look like you're really vain and into yourself, right? Like, in WWE, they just boil it down to the most caricature of it all, you know?
Well, and he's going to have a way cooler entrance in NXT than he's ever going to have on the main roster. So it's a great move. But because he has been on the main roster, maybe Fandango is hurt still, or I don't know what happened to him. But
But
Velveteen Dream. I don't think they're going to give it to a callback guy. So Velveteen Dream.
I mean, I could see unless he's going to be there and they think, you know what I mean? He can run with it for a little bit and get some good matches out of these guys because we're going to now transition Dream into the world title picture. So I could see that. But, I think Dream's coming away with this. Yeah.
Yeah, I got Dream.
All right.
What's next?
Ladder match for the vacant NXT Tag Team Championships because the Viking, Raider, Warrior experience guys had to vacate the titles, right? You know what I mean?
No, why?
They didn't have to, but they just did. Right, yeah.
And they're not on Raw?
Well, they said they were going to go to Raw, so.
The fuck is happening?
All right, so we got Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan. Street Profits.
Yep.
Forgotten Sons.
Nope.
Ooh, I think maybe. And Fish and O'Reilly, which I don't think we'll get it.
No.
It's down to Street Profits, Forgotten Sons, but I do think they finally pull the trigger on the Street Profits and give them some gold. That just feels right. God, I love the Street Profits. They're my
Street
favorite.
Profits. Yeah. They're getting it. Favorite. Red Solo Cup. They're doing it.
They are the new Harlem Heat for me, right? They just got a little more swagger than even Harlem Heat had, right? Harlem Heat had a, we're cool and we're about to fuck you the hell up. Street Profits are a little more like, we're cool and it's a party. Oh, also we're going to fuck you up, right? Like, it's just like, right.
Yeah. Street Profits definitely have more of a vibe of, hey, let's everyone have fun because if you don't, I'll fuck you up.
Right.
Where Harlem Heat was like, we don't fucking like anyone in this party.
Yeah,
like, get out of here.
We're coming here and we're having fun because we're about to fuck some shit up.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A little bit different vibe, but I like Street Profits. God. Forgotten Sons are good. They have kind of, to me, and maybe it's that Southern vibe, but they have a revival kind of touch to them.
There's a lot of heel tag teams right now, though, too. So I think the Street Profits got to have them. You know,
yeah, Undisputed Era. I think maybe, like you said, there's dissension. I think maybe something happens here where Roderick Strong tries to help them out, maybe, and that causes a what the fuck did you do, Roderick? We had the match won and you fucked it up. Like, I think maybe that's what happens, and then that's how Street Profits get it. So I'm going Street Profits.
All right, I'm going Street Profits also. Now we've got the women's championship match. We got Io Shirai taking on Shayna Baszler. I think this might be one where Shayna Baszler loses, and we might be seeing her go to the main rosters, maybe? I don't know.
And do what?
Well, who knows do what? I mean, they brought up Lacey Evans to do what? You know what I mean?
Well, Lacey Evans is wrestling matches,
well,
though.
Okay, so they might do that with her, too, with Shayna Baszler. They might throw her in. She's going to be better than some people that are up there now. I wish they would do this. Do what they did with Tyler Breeze. Send Baszler up and bring somebody else back down. Right? Who would you swap out? Who would you swap out? I'm going to send up a Baszler, bring back two main roster, one from each brand.
Dana Brooke.
Dana Brooke, good one. Yep, Dana Brooke definitely coming back.
And SmackDown. I can't remember who's on fucking. No, because she's on Raw.
Tamina?
No.
Tamina's on SmackDown.
Yeah, but she's whatever. I'm going to send back from SmackDown. I'm going to send back
Nikki Cross. They're not using her.
Nikki Cross is so great. No, she just got to win with Becky Lynch.
Yeah, they are using her. That's right. Yeah.
No, I'm going to send down Carmella.
Yeah.
Carmella. What is she doing?
Yeah, but I feel like she's main roster ready. They just don't have shit because they suck at the storyline, right? Like, she can pull it off.
Okay. Well, then if it's like the main roster ready kind of stuff,
sucks,
then I'm separating.
To go back. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Then I'm separating Fire and Desire, and I'm sending Sonya Deville back down.
Right, because, you were right with Dana Brooke, right? Like, needs a little more seasoning. Like, there's something there. People are getting behind her. Like, I can see improvement, but needs some more work, right? Definitely needs
Sonya
some more
Deville.
Work.
Yeah, I'm sending Sonya Deville and Dana Brooke down, and I'm putting up Shayna.
So but you think Baszler's coming away
this is what
this
I'm
match.
Doing. Though. This is what I'm doing. Right. I'm sending Shayna Baszler up, but I'm sending her as a top girl, and I'm sending her two henchmen with her. And so it's three of them go up. Four of them come back down. I'm sending Natty, Dana Brooke, Naomi, and Sonya Deville. Those four are going back down.
Well, and here's the thing, too, and this is what I've talked about. Like, I get that NXT, they thought, is kind of the intermediary between the Performance Center and the main rosters. And I get that. Okay. But I still think you could have three separate distinct brands that are main roster, and they can all be different. We keep hitting on this, right? And you can swap these people in and out. If one felt like an AEW, where you could have sent the guys like the Dean Ambrose, and then, you know what I mean? You can send a Natty to wherever she fits best, and when she gets stale there, you can move it. But they just don't do that here. They don't send some of these people. Like you said, there's no reason Naomi can't, for 6 months, go work the NXT. Hey, you get 6 months off of the road. We're going to set you up in a goddamn rental, you know what I mean? A leased out fucking place.
Or go back to your
home
in Tampa.
Or go to your home in Tampa if you want. Or you can have a fucking, we've got one of the WWE corporate houses for lease on, you know what I mean? Like, we'll just, you know, like that. They can just buy some houses that they let these people live in for a few months. Like, they could do whatever, they could do all these things. I don't know, whatever. So you think Baszler's winning? I'm going to call it. I'm going to say Io Shirai wins it. Why not?
I wouldn't know Io Shirai if she walked into a room wearing a shirt that said, "My name is Io Shirai."
Neither would I.
I'm not picking her.
Neither would I. And then the NXT championship match, Johnny Gargano defends against Adam Cole. Baby! New champ?
Yes.
New champ.
This is where, if you remember in their last match in the third fall, the Undisputed Era tried to interfere. Johnny Gargano overcame the odds and still captured the title. I think even though this is my prediction, is that Roderick Strong is going to lose clean. He's going to try to help out the tag.
Yeah.
Fuck it up. Then the three of them are going to prevail, get Adam Cole the title.
Uh-huh.
We're all thinking it's good. Then on NXT programming, we're going to do a, you know, coronation celebration of Adam Cole as the champion. Adam Cole is going to talk about how great of a night it was, except for one thing that happened. He's going to call out Roderick Strong. They're going to kick him out of Undisputed Era. And then the first title challenger for Adam Cole is going to be Roderick Strong.
Yep.
Full circle.
You just booked it. Yeah, full
God
circle, because
I did.
That was like their first like major guy they were going at. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and that's a great story. That's a great story to tell. That is a great story to tell. Yeah, I think the same thing. I think Adam Cole is winning this thing, baby. I think we might even see Gargano go away. I think they wanted him up there.
Yeah. He was on. He was part of the four. Remember, it was Gargano, Ciampa, Aleister Black, and Ricochet. And then all of a sudden they had to call an audible because of Ciampa.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I think I could easily see Gargano kind of lose the title, go away because he got beat up by all the Undisputed Era, comes back when Ciampa gets back. They do a whole, like, we're taking over kind of thing, do a couple takeovers, and then go back to the roster, and then now we're fucking everyone up.
I got it. He shows up out of nowhere, roll-up pins R-Truth, becomes the 24/7 champion, but defends it like he goes stand in the ring, right? And he just starts taking on 2-3 guys at a time, right? Kicking out of pinfalls, pinning a few of them, right? Like, and then he's just Johnny wrestling, right? Like, too quick, too good for you, 24/7 champion. He manages to last like 3 weeks or something doing that nonsense, right? And then he's built that little, like, holy crap, this little kid's, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a firecracker.
That'd be cool.
Right.
Which, by the way, how bad did the 24/7 title look that Roman Reigns had the opportunity to win it, but he said, no, R-Truth, you get it. I don't want that fucking thing.
Well, why would R-Truth want it back when he just was talking about how burdensome it was to run for it? Here's the problem with it, man. It's not a championship given to the person who can win the matches the most for it. It's the person who can outrun the competition the longest. And what kind of fucking champion is that, and why do we care?
Well, will it ever get a proper match in a pay-per-view?
Can it? Because they're constantly being chased at all hours of the day. So how could a match even start when they're walking to the goddamn ring? They're going to get rolled up and chased. And then Shane McMahon is able to suspend the rules, so it's a 23.9/6.94 title? Just because a guy's got a match scheduled later, that means the 24/7 is off, then it's not 24/7. Like, again,
dumb.
So there's conflicting reports on whose idea this was, but one of the ideas that that I've seen out there is that the USA Network has been sending WWE ideas of how to get the ratings up, and Vince has been cornered into, I've got to fucking take something, and this is the only one that wasn't the absolute drizzling shits. Now, I don't know what those ideas, and we've discussed this whole thing that maybe Vince doesn't know what's the drizzling shits anymore, and maybe there were some better fucking ideas that he passed in favor of this. I don't know, man. I don't know, but that title sucks.
We don't know, but...
That title really sucks.
But yeah, there you go. So we gave you the NXT picks. Go ahead.
Yeah, we gave you the NXT picks. Let me hit, we have three tweet tables that I wanted to cover, and one of them I really want to get into, so I'll save that one for last. First one real quick, @B_double_D. By the way, play along, hashtag tweet the table on Twitter, and this will be our WWE main roster portion of the show, three tweet the tables. That's how much, we're honestly giving
it
more than
deserves.
We want to. We're giving it more than we want to.
I went to Raw and I didn't want to talk about it.
And I was going to bring this up. I knew that. Okay. We talked about it being too long. It's a 3-hour show. There's a dark match afterwards, right? They do stuff beforehand. You arrive early beforehand. You've got to wait in line even though you've arrived early. You're there 4+5 even some hours in the actual vicinity of the venue itself, not to mention your drive times, any time you need to spend around the thing. They've asked you to spend a fucking work day to come watch this goddamn thing. You know what I mean? Like, and I knew... I don't have the fucking time and patience to put to that with it being as boring as it is right now. So when they were coming, I never even looked at tickets. I was like, I'm not fucking going. I hope Tom doesn't ask me to go. I don't want to tell him I'm not going because it's boring.
Well, I'll tell you even one more on top of that is they're coming back to Kansas City at the end of October. October is my birthday month. October 2nd is my birthday. Emily said, hey, I can get you ringside seats for SmackDown. And I said, I don't want you to spend that much money because I won't have that much fun.
That's going to be...
You think things are going to change?
The Fox, though. That's going to be the Fox.
Who the fuck cares? Ain't nothing fucking changing. One thing that I found funny is they said, SmackDown is coming October with matches as Kofi Kingston as champion defends against Kevin Owens. I'm like, you don't fucking know in October that goddamn match is going to happen and Kofi's going to still be your champion. Fuck
they may
off.
Need to do that match. You should note that somewhere and see if they do that match. But by then it'll be Kofi mid-card again, Kevin Owens in some bullshit storyline that nobody cares about. And he's, the real guy will come interrupt him. They'll do something like that. Remember when WWE... When all this started happening, when everybody was like, you guys fucking suck. And they were like, we hear you. Stay tuned. Right? Remember when they were like, stay tuned, everybody.
Yeah.
Right? What the fuck have they done? Did they think that they fucking delivered? Do they think that? Or are we still supposed to be fucking staying tuned?
They got rid of Corbin as the general manager. That's all they did. And Paige went away.
And all he did was get better. All right. @B_double_D says, wow, Kofi is champ fucking sucks. Hashtag tweet the table. What do you think, man? Now that we've had Kofi for about a month or so.
I think Kofi and Seth Rollins both are the same. I don't think one's
suck.
Any.
Thank you.
Yeah. I will say that at least Kofi has a storyline with the Kevin Owens turns on him, joins New Day kind of thing. There's nothing that Seth Rollins is doing. He's literally just spinning his wheels. I think of the two champions.
Kofi's better.
Kofi's is better.
I did like – so like when Kevin Owens is saying he was this and he's too good of a person, I mean Kofi's not the most charismatic speaker, but he was very babyface and delivered on as such when he's like, you are not a good person. You lied about this. And then you lied about this when you want to do that. Yeah. You're not a good person. You're a liar. Right? Like very easy to digest. The kids go, right? The dumb people
go that
way.
When he was
throwing
the pancakes, I wanted a pancake at Raw.
Right.
Like, I like him as champion.
Right.
I think he's just getting hated on because the whole thing sucks. It's not him.
Right. So, I think he's doing very serviceable and I agree. Seth Rollins is in the same character and not pulling it off as well.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Exactly. @ChrisMercado23 says, I haven't seen this much personality out of Lesnar since he came out in a sombrero. Hashtag tweet. We've got to get Brock some props. That's all it is.
Or he just doesn't fucking care.
Right.
Maybe I think he's doing this well because he thinks down on it. Like he's like, oh, you guys want me to dance? Well, this was good. And we're like, that's entertaining. And he's like, oh, you thought it was entertaining? I was being an asshole. I'm like, no, we like that.
Here's that too. Brock Lesnar has all of the creative freedom that John Moxley said he was never really allowed as Dean Ambrose, right?
Yeah.
But it works. And we can say, well, it's awesome. Brock Lesnar, but Brock Lesnar's allowed to be what Brock Lesnar thinks Brock Lesnar should be, and it shows very well, right? Like, and mm-hmm. it's consistent, and it's definable, right?
I
that's
hate him.
Where it comes
yeah,
out
I
well.
Hate him, and that's the thing. I hate him, right. And I should. He does
right,
awesome.
Right. All right, final one, and this is a segment we haven't really hit on, but maybe we'll get a little into this. At Katie First Lady says, the electric chair? Really? That's what it's been feeling like watching Raw in recent weeks. Hashtag tweet the table, which is a very good joke. And yes, so by all accounts, they thought this was going to be a real thing. We're going to sit somebody in the electric chair. We're going to take real questions from the audience. They pre-screened the questions, but these were real questions that they allowed to be asked. And mm-hmm. then Sami Zayn goes and blurts out, you could have asked me anything. You could have asked me about AEW. Now, there's conflicting reports on whether or not he was told to fit that line in or whether he brought it up. But either way, there's no way in hell you can now just give people in the crowd a live mic, because even if they tell you they're going to ask something else, they're just going to be like, AW, what? Right? Like, you're just going to be inundated.
Oh, I would
with
have.
This.
I was sitting right behind the guy that asked the first question. I was literally one row behind him, just to the left of the camera. If you would have gave me a mic, I would have said this. I would have said, "Hey, Sami Zayn, I dare you, double or nothing."
Would you have lied? Would you have said, "I'm going
to
ask him some vanilla thing," and then got the mic?
Said,
and then, yeah.
"Hey, I want you to know," this is what I would have said if they would have asked me. They didn't come to me, but yeah. I would have said, "My question is I want to know." Yeah, this is my pre-screen question. Right, I would have said, "Hey, I want to know. Does he think Kevin Owens can beat Kofi Kingston?"
Okay, right.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty easy. You know, that's his friend. Yada yada. Yeah. Then I would have said, "Hey, double or nothing. Where's El Generico?"
Yeah.
Double or nothing's in there, and El Generico.
AEW, double or nothing. Where's El Generico?
Yeah.
Is El Generico going to show up at AEW?
Yeah. That's. But I would have just asked him about that, because one thing that I found very funny about the whole double or nothing, when everyone was tweeting about it, where Big E, I thought, had the absolute best one, where he's like, "I hope Redacted has a great event tonight," and all that shit. I thought that was great. Sasha Banks says, "I love wrestling." Shut the fuck up, you weirdo. I don't empathize with her even after hearing John Moxley. I still don't like her. Anyhow, my favorite thing was El Generico's first tweet in years was something like, "I love pro wrestling" related on the night of Double or Nothing. Thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
And then did you see Nick Jackson's tweet after the AEW thing?
Mm-hmm. Where it was
he just tweeted Sami Zayn. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's very much a question you could ask, because you could be like, "Hey, since you hate this place so much, why don't you be like John Moxley and go to AEW, right? Like, just throwing that one out there." Because even at that, then they shouldn't get so mad, right? Like, why don't you be like that? It's not like you're saying, like, "Oh, they're better." You're almost insulting him, right? Why don't you just fucking leave and go there then?
Yeah.
And then they would have been like, "Well,
I would have asked him about El Generico just because I wanted to see his answer." Because he would have been like, "No, I want to be here to be your critic" and all that. But
did you notice, like, the girl asked something, the little girl, and then Sami Zayn said something back, and she went to go, like, say something back, and Charlie Caruso, was that who was doing it? Yanked that microphone from that little girl so fast. Like, she was like,
Well, she was the best thing of the whole night, because she said, do you miss being a part of the Ginger Snaps?
Yeah, right, right.
And he said, "Are you talking about Becky Lynch?" And what she tried to say was, "Duh."
Right.
But Charlie got scared and pulled the mic from. And so.
Well,
and
she
then
said
that
but then she did another one. Like, she went to say something else, and maybe you could see it if you're on TV, was he said something again, and she went to, like, say something again, and she's still like, almost fucking Heisman'd her away from the
And that was the first thing was because Sami Zayn was like, "Don't you mean you're asking about Seth Rollins?" And he did the wink, wink.
Yeah, but again,
there's
no way this is going to be honest. This is going to be like the fucking online where we get to pick the matches, and there were three matches, but they were all the same.
Yeah.
They were the
Cyber
same exact
Sunday.
Fucking, Cyber Sunday. They were the same fucking match, and who knows if there was real goddamn results any fucking way. Like, bullshit. Yeah.
Live, though, and I'll say this was the only thing that was honestly the hardest thing to understand, is they do the electric chair. They didn't promote to the arena at all that the main event was going to be Seth Rollins versus Sami Zayn, I went with my, I'm going to get married to Emily, so I'll just say my brother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
And he's not a wrestling fan at all. He just likes Braun Strowman. That's the only reason he goes, because he thinks he's fun to watch and he thinks he's silly. And so Seth Rollins just runs down to the ring, and then my brother-in-law goes, why is he taking his shirt off? Why is there a ref? I guess the wrestling? Like, there was nothing to it. Like, really? Why did he do that? I mean, maybe it was said on TV, but it wasn't said to us. And so, there was a big disconnect in the main event. Big disconnect.
Yeah. Yeah. I talked to some other folks who were there from my work who don't follow as much. And I don't think they've been to like a live Raw in a long time, because they were like, nobody even told us that there was a match after the main event. Like, we were getting ready to leave, and people were like, you know what I mean? Yanking us.
That's a thing that you got to kind of know. That was fine. The worst segment was the Shane McMahon. They, because I was just laughing, chanted AEW, this is boring and this is awful a lot. Shane needs to fucking get out of here. No one wants your fucking dry ass promos and your fucking bitch ass angles.
Okay, so, and I've thought that too. Now, I was thinking watching SmackDown, I was like, well, I'll give it this. I do fucking hate it, right? Like, I hate it, right? Like, I hate his...
Hate what?
His monotone, like, I'm too coked out to remember what I'm saying, delivery of his fucking lines. Like, he's kind of like, wait, am I supposed to be saying this right now? It's almost how it feels like he's... You ever like read something and you're not sure you're reading it right? Like, if I'm reading this off the page right now, that's how it sounds. It's like his fucking promos. Like, he's reading it in his fucking brain. And I hate it. And I'm supposed to hate him, right? So I fucking hate it. There is that, right? But I really loathe and want to just turn it off. If you're also putting him in the fucking ring, stop it. Okay, again, here's what you've lost. This is something you used to know. That payoff is great at the end of the year at WrestleMania, at the end of the 7-month build that he's been fucking with Roman Reigns, right? And Roman Reigns finally gets a match with Shane McMahon. But now we've had Shane McMahon versus The Miz 17 fucking times. And we've had Shane McMahon, Roman Reigns coming now. And Shane McMahon, everybody, god damn it. Like, stop. He's not... he is an active wrestler now.
Yeah,
like, that's what he is. He's an active wrestler. That's what we're doing with Shane McMahon.
Yeah,
what is going on?
Stupid.
So that's where we're at, and that's why we've had mostly focused on AEW, because it was, quite frankly, the better product. Yeah.
Hey, like I said, there are discrepancies and improvements that definitely can be made, but I am very optimistic and happy, and I look forward to their next shows, and I look forward to TNT, AEW. I'm a fan.
They got an A this week. Nothing else did. I'll tell you that.
Exactly.
All right, and on that, we will come back and give you another A-plus episode next week of the Spanish Announce Table.
Fun fact, there are no nuts in Honey Nut Cheerios.
The Spanish Announce Table.